Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 28, Puranjana becomes a woman in the next life, text 7. King Puranjana then saw that everything in his town was scattered, and that his sons, grandsons, servants, and ministers were all gradually opposing him. He also noted that his wife was becoming cold and indifferent. Purport. When one becomes an invalid, his senses and organs are weakened. In other words, they are no longer under one's control. The senses and sense objects then begin to oppose him. When a person is in a distressed condition, even his family members, his sons, grandsons, and wife become disrespectful. They no longer are under the command of the master of the house. Just as we wish to use our senses for sense gratification, the senses also require strength from the body in reciprocation. A man keeps a family for enjoyment, and similarly, family members demand enjoyment from the head of the family. When they do not receive sufficient money from him, they grow disinterested and ignore his commands or desires. This is all due to one's being a kripana, miser. This word kripana, used in the 6th verse, is in opposition to the word brahmana. In the human form of life, one should become a brahmana, which means that one should understand the constitutional position of the absolute truth, Brahman, and then engage in his service as a Vaishnava. We get this facility in the human form of life, but if we do not properly utilize this opportunity, we become a kripana, miser. A miser is one who gets money but does not spend it properly. This human form of life is especially meant for understanding Brahman, for becoming a brahmana, and if we do not utilize it properly, we remain a kripana. We can actually see that when one has money but does not spend it, he remains a miser and is never happy. Similarly, when one's intelligence is spoiled due to sense gratification, he remains a miser throughout his life. Translation again. King Puranjana then saw that everything in his town was scattered and that his sons, grandsons, servants, and ministers were all gradually opposing him. He also noted that his wife was becoming cold and indifferent. Om Gyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshur Militan Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. These are the tricks of time. The living entity has the loving propensity. And that loving propensity wants to emanate from you without hindrance, without barrier, without deterioration. That is actually the deep desire of the living entity. Let my love rays, so to speak, just like the sun has rays. Let my love rays expand without running into any brick walls. Without weakening, without these love rays weakening in strength. And let me feel others' love rays unimpeded and not weakened. But we're operating in the material atmosphere. Prakriti sthani garshati, Krishna says in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The oppressive material atmosphere, its job is to militate against you holding on. You're holding on to all the things that you're so attached to. So there's this ferocious attachment, and then there's this ferocious environment that is nullifying the results of all your attachments. It's a very severe situation being in material nature. It's not something to take casually. Oh, well, that's life. You know, this is the way the world is. You just got to go with it and do the best you can. Now, to be a proper intelligent person, to not be a kripana, a miser, who misuses the human intelligence. We have to understand that we are in a severe situation. All our hopes and dreams and aspirations on the material platform will be frustrated, impeded. Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita. Mogasha, moga karmano, moga jnana vichetasa. Mogasha, all your hopes, moga karma, all your activities for improvement, moga jnana, all your attempts for knowledge, they'll all be defeated. Because when the hopes, the actions, and the attempts to acquire knowledge are on the material platform, you are firmly in the grip of time. You're defeated before you even start. Then you say, why does anyone endeavor? Why does anyone try to accomplish things in this world? If it's so obvious what time is going to do. But that is the nature of illusion. That's the nature of Krishna's illusory energy. When you take shelter of that illusory energy. And how do you take shelter of illusory energy? By your activities. When you put yourself in the grip of the modes of material nature, then you're asking for time to unleash its full fury upon you. But because there are temporary activities giving temporary happiness, we think, well, it'll all balance out. You've got the ravages of time, and then you have certain delights, certain sensual delights which make the struggle worthwhile. We ask that Krishna conscious practitioners live a purified lifestyle because only in that way can they see the tricks of time. Someone may talk about it theoretically. Time is doing this, time is doing that. But they can't get out of the grip of time. And they further implicate themselves in activities that make them more a prisoner of time. So you can understand, from one angle of view, people's, their point of view. You can understand from your point of view, their point of view. Well, look, we've got to do something. We want to love. We want to be happy. We want to relate. What are we supposed to do? Just stop all these things just because of time? In fact, why not utilize time in the best way you can? Since it's a hopeless situation, ultimately, why not enjoy as much as you can now? Just like the body. This body will meet its end sometime in the far future. So why not just go with the body's desires and demands? What's wrong with that? That is utilizing time. Time has given you a body. Time has given you material circumstances. Why not utilize them for your own gratification? Isn't that the smart thing to do? That's what Western society will tell you. Time management. Use that time properly for production efficiency, consumption efficiency, and sense gratification efficiency. You've got to be industrious during the day and industrious at night too. And that way, you're properly utilizing time. Now, in this way, you completely come under the grip of time even more. This is the great tragedy. And you can't even see it, and you don't even really care. I was speaking at the University of Toronto last week, and during our 10-day string of events there, one night we spoke on the yoga of relationships. Because everyone's into relationships these days. How to have a relationship. It's like a lost knowledge. These days, if you want to have a relationship, you have to first go to a bookstore and get, you know, four or five books on how to have a relationship. You know, what is he thinking? What is she thinking? How to say no? How to say yes? On it goes. People are so bereft in Kali Yuga of good sense that just to have a relationship is a bewildering, mysterious thing. So, in this seminar, we dealt with people's legitimate aspirations for loving exchanges. You can't ignore that. But how can you have a proper loving exchange in an atmosphere ruled by time? That is the point of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, yes, you want to love. Yes, you want to be loved. You want relationships. But how can you do that in this context? That is the point. Prakriti sthani karshati. You're operating in the oppressive material atmosphere. That, acknowledging that fact is your first priority. Deal with that, and then later you can properly deal with relationships. Ignore that fact, and you'll never have the opportunity for proper relationships because time will always be in there disrupting things. Narada Muni is explaining the emotional reaction of King Paranjana. When Vishiranam Sotpurim Viksha, he saw the devastation happening in his own town. Swapuri, my own town, my place. That means his body and the surroundings of his bodily affairs. His body, his bodily surroundings were attacked. And even his relatives, his servants, his employees were all gradually opposing him. It's like almost like the law of the jungle. They see he's becoming weak, so they no longer take him seriously. And even worse, he also noted that his wife was becoming cold and indifferent. This really just devastates the male ego. When someone who the male ego thinks, I've given my all to that person, or I've put up with that person for so many years, I've given my money, I've done this, I've done that. And now she's becoming cold and indifferent. The male ego can't handle it. Sometimes it's said that there are two things that make the material world go around. The male ego and the female mind. So the two together create endless complications. So here you see the male ego in action. The wife becoming cold and indifferent. I can't believe it. After all I've done. In the USA, the statistics are that 65% of the men involved in a divorce are totally shocked, you know, that because when their wife proposes the divorce, it's like, what do you mean? They're caught off guard, 65% of the men. they just had no idea that they weren't providing all the emotional nourishment they should be providing, whatever. They had no idea. They just thought, you know, life is going on. I'm working, money is there, the sense gratification is there, okay, the relationship's fine. So, seeing the senses oppose you, seeing that your senses are no longer under your control, this is very humiliating. If you ever talk to very old people, this is what they describe as the prominent reality. They're humbled, they've lost their independence. They're dependent to do everything. The basic bodily functions, in order to do them, they're so dependent on others. The senses in which they put so much faith and hope in are now opposing them. This is such a hellish situation that people don't want to live through it. They would rather die. The reality is, as Prabhupada points out in the purport, just as we wish to use our senses for sense gratification, the senses also require strength from the body in reciprocation. You don't get anything for free in the material world. There's always a price to pay. How much do we want to forget about reality and embrace the immediate demands of our senses? You pay the price when you do that. You lose all conception of the passing of time. You don't care anymore. And as time does its tricks, even your own dearly beloveds, your relatives, husband or wife, their behavior changes. They oppose you. And this cracks the heart of the conditioned soul. The whole world is full of cracked hearts. Conditioned souls who are living in reaction to having their heart cracked in the past. At this Yoga of Relationships seminar, I was speaking of a true story from Ukraine, a devotee there. He's in his mid-30s, and his father died and left him as an inheritance a one-bedroom apartment. Now, in Ukraine, to inherit a one-bedroom apartment is like, you know, you have just gotten a mansion in Beverly Hills, in Los Angeles. It's like, wow, the supreme destination. You've got your own place, even just a one-bedroom apartment. Wow. So he had a nice relationship with his family. I mean, he hadn't lived at home for maybe 15 years, but he had a nice relationship with his mother. As soon as the father died and he inherited this apartment, which he wanted to use for an ISKCON preaching center in his town, his mother began to oppose him and his uncle. The mother and her brother wanted to give the apartment to this devotee's cousin, daughter of his uncle. And the whole family went to war about this. They took him to court. Court in Ukraine means whoever pays the most, that's who the judge listens to. So his mother and uncle are paying off the judge. The devotee has to pay the judge, and the judge is simply waiting to see who's the highest bidder. That determines the court situation. It was kind of even, the payoffs. The mother was getting desperate. Now, remember, she's fighting her own son, her only son, over an apartment. So one day she called him up and said, "Look, this is getting too bad. This is getting too ridiculous. You know, the whole family is at war. We should stop this. Come over to my house now and let us have a peace dinner." So, what can you do? Her mother says, like, "Let's make up. Let's have, let's dine together as a family and patch this up." Normally, he was a strict devotee. He wouldn't eat food cooked by non-devotees. But, what would you do in these circumstances? You would most likely, for the sake of family unity, and also, you've got your eye on getting the apartment, which is rightfully yours, to use in Krishna's service, you'd do it. So he sat down to eat. The mother was there. Her brother was there, and they're talking peace. And he's into Ayurveda and proper eating. So before he ate, he drank, water from his special copper water pot from India, and all that. And so, in the water pot were psychological drugs to derange his mind. In the food was poison to kill him. So he drank the water, and he ate some of the food, and within 20 minutes, he was on the floor just writhing. And his mind was reeling from the psychological drugs. He was completely bewildered mentally. Physically, he's in agony as the poison's in his stomach. And what is his mother and uncle doing? They're pounding with their fists. "Die! Die! Die!" This is Kali Yuga. Your own mother. Who had been so nice to you all your life, and just because of this apartment, she's poisoning you and pounding you with her fists with her brother. "Die, die, die. You won't oppose us now, will you? Die." Well, he didn't die. They took him to the hospital, and he was supposed to die, but actually he recovered in 7 days, much to the astonishment of the doctors. Of course, there were no criminal charges pressed against the mother or uncle because they when they saw he was going to live, they paid off the police. So anyway, he asked me, when I was in Ukraine last year. What to do? Should he go on with the court case? I said, if you see there's a chance for victory, in other words, if you see that there's a chance you can outbribe the judge, then, you know, yeah, it'd be nice for ISKCON to have a preaching center in that town. So he did, and eventually he won the court case, and so, you know, he got the apartment. And I asked, well, how is your mother reacting to all this? He said she's practically lost her mind. She's like almost on, she's practically materially gone nuts because of, she knows what she did to her own son. And he didn't even die. He's still living, and she has to face that reality. So she's practically gone just completely crazy. This is life in this world. This is what time does, the tricks time play. You think you have a nice relationship, time changes that. Time changes everything. So how can we take shelter of time, even for relationships, which everyone wants? People like to talk about unconditional love. You go to yoga centers, people are into meditation, vegetarianism, organic, this and that. They have that buzzword, unconditional love. Yeah, that's what we should be into, unconditional love. Just loving for the sake of loving. The question I always pose is, how can you have unconditional love in a world of conditions? I kind of scratch the head. Every time you try to do something, it's subject to conditions. I can do this if that happens. If such and such is a situation, then something else can happen. There's always dependency on your bodily strength, your mental clarity, the weather, finances, so many things like that. How can you have unconditional love on the material platform? It's not possible. How can you have relationships that are beyond the grip of time? That can only happen on the spiritual platform. The spiritual platform doesn't mean some kind of fuzzy, vague, New Age concept. The spiritual platform means devotional service. Unconditional love means pure devotional service. That is the example set in Braj Leela. And that is why Lord Chaitanya came to demonstrate. He came to demonstrate the unfathomable depths of pure love. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami is about to describe the Rudra Bhava, the spotlessly pure love of Krishna's most intimate devotees, the gopis, he says that actually only Sukhdamodar knows about this. So if anyone talks about it, they must have heard it from Sukhdamodar. And what is that special thing? How the gopis were never thinking of their own pleasure. They're simply always thinking of Krishna's pleasure. Their happiness is when Krishna's happy. And even when they're happy, because Krishna's happy, it's not a self-indulgent happiness. Their happiness is so pure that it nourishes Krishna's happiness further. So it's a 100% efficient process of unconditional love. They do something to make Krishna happy. Krishna's happiness then nourishes the gopi's sense of happiness. But it's not a self-indulgent thing. Oh, Krishna's making us happy. No. Their happiness 100% projects back to Krishna. So, this is life on the pure spiritual platform. There was an interesting conversation after Krishna reappeared from his disappearance from the midst of the gopis on the bank of the Jamuna. After the Gopi Gita section of the 10th canto, in which they're singing songs in separation from Krishna, suddenly Krishna appears in the middle of the night. And they take Krishna in through their eyes, into their hearts, and embrace him. Shukadeva Goswami describes the different reactions of the eight main gopis of Krishna. And then they sit Krishna down on the bank of the Jamuna. The Jamuna River has already piled up soft sand for this assembly, this most sacred assembly. And the gopis put their top pieces of cloth on the fine sand for Krishna to sit on. The Bhagavatam says, this same Krishna, who the greatest yogis, even Brahma, Shiva, even Anantashesh, they're trying to situate that Lord in their heart. And here he is sitting on these shawls of the gopis. They're massaging Krishna's feet. They're looking in his eyes with glances of pure love. But in that pureness, in that purity, they're a little bit angry because Krishna had left them. But this anger is not material. It is all 100% within the Ruddha Bhava, the spotless pure love. The anger is also for Krishna's pleasure, so that Krishna can then enjoy pacifying them. No, it wasn't like that. Let me explain. This is also pleasure to make up. Even in old pop songs in Western culture, not anymore, but now in the past, they used to sing songs like "The Best Part of Breaking Up is Making Up." You know, it's like a real heart-tugging thing, making up again, coming together again. But this is this truth is only real on the spiritual platform. And tasting that nectar of purity, pure love, the gopis apparently express anger with Krishna. Very, very cultured way, very slightly. Out of the corners of their eyes, there were traces of anger they were projecting at him while massaging his feet. And so they posed those famous three questions to Krishna about pure love. They were thinking, we'll indirectly let him know that we're a little angry, and why did he treat us like this? Why did he leave us? So they asked Krishna. They said, you know, we're not Vedic scholars. We're innocent ladies of the village. Therefore, we want to know from you, if you could so kindly explain. The three types of lovers. The first one will respond according to the respond according to how the lover is treating that person. The other lover treats nicely, and so you reciprocate with that. The second type reciprocates favorably no matter what the other lover is doing. And the third type is seems to be oblivious, seems to be just untouched or unfazed by whatever is happening. So which is the best type? So this way they were actually, shall we say, getting on Krishna's case a bit. What type are you? And we've been doing everything for you, and then you're acting in this way. But they were posing the questions so artfully, so subtly. And we must remember, these questions were in the realm of spotless pure love. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. And so he also enjoys patching things up in an apparent misunderstanding. So Krishna answered. He was very firm about the type of lover who only who reciprocates in exact proportion to how he or she is treated. Krishna said, this is merchant's love. Prahlad Maharaj says the same thing in the seventh canto. Vanik seva, merchant's service. Business deal. You give me, I respond to you in exactly the same proportion. You're nice to me, I'm nice to you. You're loving to me, I'm loving to you. Krishna spoke very strongly about this type. And indeed, Srila Prabhupada makes the point in the Krishna book. that better not to love at all than have this merchant type of love. This is a very strong point for us. You better not to love at all than have this kind of relationship, you know, which seems good, you know. As you do for me, I do for you. You're favorable, I'm favorable. You treat me nicely, I reciprocate. What's wrong with that? Yeah. But the standard of Ruta Bhava, the gopi's spotless love for Krishna, is so great. In other words, the real thing is so great that even equal reciprocation type of love affair is condemned by the Bhagavatam standard. That's how high bhakti is. It's redefining the whole phenomenon of relationships. So therefore, better not to love at all than have this kind of equal reciprocation type of love. Then Krishna responded further. The second type, in which the lover loves favorably, no matter how the partner is treating him or her, that is, Krishna says, that's very good. And the example, of course, is given. Parents who take care of the children, even though the children don't acknowledge or reciprocate, or a material example to give us insight into how does pure love, unconditional love, operate. Then Krishna says, as for the third type, who apparently seem to be unfazed, unaffected, it could be because of two reasons. First, they could apparently be unfazed and unaffected because they are self-sufficient. They're Atmarama. In this way, Krishna, of course, is saying that's his situation. That I am self-sufficient. At the same time, I agree to be conquered by the love of my devotees, even though I am self-sufficient. And then the second type could be that they're just callous, envious persons who are ungrateful. And the example given in the Krishna book is disciples who don't appreciate the gifts of their spiritual master and just treat these gifts callously and without any gratitude. But Krishna's point was, indirectly, he's saying, I'm in the self-sufficient category. Then he goes on to say that, how could I ever be away from you all? How could I ever be separated? Actually, when you were going through the depths of your separation in the forest of Braj in the middle of the night, I was there from an unseen vantage point. I was watching your ecstasy and separation. Don't think that I'm callous. No. Let me explain something about myself. A very crucial point. Sometimes when I see my devotees attached to me, I'll disappear from that devotee just to increase his attachment. And that way the devotee 24 hours a day is absorbed in thoughts of me. Just like someone who never had money before and gets a big stash and then loses it. They always think about what they lost. So I know that psychology. In other words, Krishna, in this section of Bhagavatam, is telling us, I know how to love. Don't worry. Trust me. This is unconditional love. And it is this kind of love that Lord Chaitanya brought to be tasted in Kali Yuga, the most degraded time in existence. That's why Rupa Goswami says, Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prem Pradayate, Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gaura Sinha. Who is more magnanimous than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Who in this most degraded time is giving this most confidential, precious gift of the reality of pure, unconditional love? And this is what the heart is yearning for. We look for that in relationships that are ruled by time, and that is the big mistake. Now, if relationships, I explained this at the University of Toronto, if relationships, though temporary and involving temporary bodies and minds, can be used to attain the eternal to attain Krishna consciousness, then that is the proper utilization. But simply to use relationships to become further embedded in time's grip, and in fact, to become totally forgetful of time, that is the Kripana's life, the miser's life, who has the human form of life, but can't utilize it properly. So this is our big challenge. What are we going to do about time? How can we use time in our favor? How can we use the things of this world, the relationships of this world, so that we become free from time? And what is beyond time? Not just liberation, freedom from material existence. What is beyond time is the most extraordinary love, the most extraordinary relationships. That's why Krishna explained to in the ninth canto about Maharaj Ambarish after his incident with Durvasa Muni. Krishna said that my devotees are fulfilled just by their devotional service. Now, as a result of their devotional service, they are awarded the liberations of Salokya, to live on the same planet as the Lord. Sarshti, to share the same opulences as the Lord. Samipya, to be an associate of the Lord. Sarupya, to have the same form as the Lord. That does come as a product of devotional service, but the devotees don't accept even those spiritual benedictions that come because they're fully satisfied with devotional service itself. So just see the situation. By performing devotional service, you get these spiritual liberations. We're not talking about material liberations. We're talking about spiritual liberations. But the devotee doesn't even accept that because he's simply satisfied having devotional service. So then Krishna commented, if the devotee doesn't accept spiritual liberations, certainly there's no point of even talking about material liberations or elevation to the material heavenly situations. There's no point of even talking about that. Both material elevation and material liberation are still under the clutches of time. Devotee doesn't want those kind of benedictions. But a devotee doesn't even accept spiritual benedictions. Once we start to understand this, how a devotee is satisfied simply by having devotional service, then we can slowly start to perceive the Rudha Bhava, the pure, spotless love of the gopis, the best lovers of Krishna, as certified by Lord Chaitanya himself. So this is what's waiting on the path of bhakti. Others are talking about unconditional love, belief in God, going to heaven, but a devotee knows I already have perfection in my devotional service. So as we progress in devotional service, we become more and more conscious, more and more Krishna conscious of the fact that I already have everything as devotional service. That is the process of bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness. You realize you've already got it all just in an attempt to serve Krishna. And that attempt to serve Krishna becomes more and more motivated by purity. Krishna helps that. He helps you to do that. And in this way, we can finally be peaceful and finally even become ecstatic, tasting what are real relationships. You probably know how Srila Prabhupada said, we'll have ISKCON in the spiritual world, and somehow or other, devotees will recognize one another. Relationships formed in devotional service endure in a way that we cannot understand now with our conditioned senses. Once you take the relationships out of the realm of time, out of the realm of material conditioning, then the relationships, because they have Krishna in the center, provide the heart's solace and happiness that the heart is looking for. So we'll stop here and ask any questions.
Thank you for a wonderful class. Maharaj, could you explain a little bit further how being self-sufficient allows one to be exempt from the obligation of reciprocating the feelings of those who are trying to love you? In other words, Krishna might not... So a self-sufficient person, of course, is still a person, so he can understand what other people are... approaching with. I mean, Krishna might not feel the need to have the love of devotees or any other, living entities. And even when he can understand that he's being loved by them, somehow or another he might not feel the need to even reciprocate, and he still feels completely okay himself. But certainly he can also simultaneously understand the need of the people who are trying to love him to experience that reciprocation. So, what am I missing here?
It's a paradox. Krishna doesn't need and doesn't want, but he comes under the control of his devotees. As we heard in that beautiful purport that Savasprabhu read this morning, Srila Prabhupada's ecstatic purport, in bhakti, both Krishna and the devotee conquer. That's Krishna's arrangement. Underneath that question is the whole point of, does the absolute truth have potencies or not? It's not possible to properly conceive of the absolute truth without potencies. Potencies mean Krishna's pleasure potencies, among others. So Krishna is always there with his potencies. So just to give you an insight into that reality, Srila Prabhupada poses the question, He makes the point that Krishna doesn't look as beautiful on his own as he does when he's with his potencies. Now, is Krishna ever alone? But just to get you to understand that the absolute truth is always there with potencies in relationships with those potencies. In that relationship with Krishna's devotees, he becomes more beautiful. And then the devotees seeing Krishna's increased beauty, they become more beautiful. And this goes on eternally. So it's a paradox. Krishna is self-sufficient, yet he arranges that he comes under the control of his devotees. It is a paradox of pure love. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glory to Prabhupada.